I'm Tom Schultz, host of Voices of Montana. Thanks for joining us for the podcast today, brought to you by Blackfoot Communications.
Does your home qualify for a $70 discount on your internet bill? Blackfoot Communications is proud to partner with the FCC to help ensure that households can afford the broadband necessary for work, school, healthcare, and more. For more information on this federal program and to see if your household qualifies for a discount on your internet service, visit goblackfoot.com/ACP. Connect to more with Blackfoot Communications.
I just look things up sometimes for the fun of it. You get curious about stuff. How many votes would you guess? How many times in the House of Representatives, state of Montana, do you think now we're 70 days into this 90-day session? How many times do you think they pushed either a red or a green button? 180,000 plus times. A lot of bills, a lot of work. For the Senate, not so much. I know they got half the numbers there too, but they're still doing less than half the work. I say that because, yes, in the majority party hour for this week, Montana Speaker of the House, Matt Regeer, is with us. We'll sum up, though, the fast pace of the last 2 weeks and look ahead to the next few weeks of the legislative session, too. We're final 20 days bearing down on us. Also, as part of the hour here, Representative Bob Keenan from Big Fork. He's a longtime lawmaker, mental health advocate. We'll discuss school-based mental health funding today on Voices of Montana. Keep hanging in, but it's not an ordinary Friday, too. This is once and only once. It was a day of great sorrow. And I think a lot of people who have deep faith feel that day of great sorrow too. But the cross made the way and it opened up to a really an eternal lifetime of peace and joy. I just want to say happy Good Friday to all and put your trust in him. You will surely not labor in vain. Matt Regeer is with us now, Montana Speaker of the House. As I mentioned, fast-paced session, bearing down like crazy, I imagine. And good morning, Speaker. I very much appreciate you being here. How you doing, sir?
Hey, good morning, Tom, and good morning, Montana. And yeah, you're absolutely right. This is a great weekend of hope, and all that hope that it gives us for the future.
Yeah, and we were kind of talking about it yesterday that we have faced a lot of challenges, and it wears on us, and it wears on our hope, and it takes energy to maintain that hope. And so, I would pray everybody has the energy to maintain their hope. And with that, then what? I'll just ask, what are your hopes now for the next 2 weeks of this session?
Well, we hope to get out of here one of these days.
Yeah, right?
We only got 90 days by Constitution to do all the work here, set the budget, and pass or not pass all the bills that we've got. And this session, Tom, has been unprecedented on the bill volume that we've had. The governor did a red tape reduction relief, and they probably had 160 bills pre-introduced coming in December already. So we came out of the gates with unprecedented volume, and we've kind of felt that all along the way, and we're still feeling that now. We've got deadlines coming up, and we're working fast-paced to meet all those deadlines.
The last 2 weeks, especially fast-paced, I should say. What's your sum of the last 2 weeks? Because, or what's your caution as the pace picks up, the numbers blur together, the spending, the policies tend to blur together. How do you keep it all straight?
Well, it's staff for first thing. We got some great staff here. That there are spreadsheets galore that we get every time we get, and like you mentioned off air, the status sheets. We get a status sheet. We've got unprecedented surplus, just like a lot of states around the nation. And there's a lot of ideas to spend that surplus. We're overspent on that surplus by, I think, about $1 billion. So a lot of decisions are going to be made here in the next few weeks of what ideas. We just can't have every idea go forward. There's not enough money for it, even with this surplus. So those decisions will be made here in the next few weeks. Approves and finance and claims, both those committees are going to have a monumental task ahead of them.
Oh, and that's always been, I think, the task of government is to restrain themselves, especially when it comes to a lot of things, but spending in this circumstance. How will you balance this? Because as you noted, we talked a bit off air, and we talked about it last week when you were on with Speaker, Minority Leader in the House. Pardon me. I know if I get that
called Speaker before.
Yeah. If I get that wrong, do I have to pony up $20 or something too? maybe. Yeah.
We'll let you slide.
Okay. Thank you, Speaker. the status sheet, okay? As you noted, there's more money people think they're spending than they have money for. And over the next 20 days of the session, what's the process to pare that down? Because that's got to happen.
Yeah, exactly. Like I said, the status sheet just has all the ideas that are out there, and we got more ideas than we do money right now. We're about over $1 billion overspent on ideas and bills floating around. So we're going to have to get together as a probes. The probes committee is the one that controls, starts the checkbook. The finance and claims is over on the Senate side, and they're the ones that okay what House Bill 2 and that comes out, really the finance guys. And we've got the status sheet that lists all the ideas out there, and we're going to have to see which one's got most support from each chamber, and those ones will probably be the ones that keep moving forward, and the ones that maybe just barely made it out or didn't have that strong of support from the caucuses are going to have to be left for a future session.
Well, and that is always the hope, too, because legislation gets passed over a period of time, and at times it's you know, an emergency kind of situation. So I'm taking it, Speaker, that there's a general idea, I think, of leadership and what they're going to do. I mean, you can look at what's on the list, and people are formulating that plan now, aren't they?
Yep, and those lists are coming together, and that's really what the whole process is about. I mean, the committees pare down all the bill drafts that come, and now we've passed, so we had even more than $1 billion overspent. We were multi-billion over, but committees pare that down, and like I said, we'll go to the Appropriations Committee and then the Finance and Claims Committee, and they're going to have to pick which priorities are we going to move forward with, which the fiscal notes that are all attached to them.
I referred to it yesterday that there'll be a little bit of crying and wiping. Is that an exaggeration?
No, that is exactly it. But it's really, and that's nothing new. I mean, it's this way every session. It's always fast-paced, and there's always tears at the end, especially now that, I mean, the bills that are left that committees haven't tabled or said no to, there's a lot of bill sponsors and supporters of a bill that they see that it has momentum and going somewhere, but yet all six bills that are addressing housing, we just don't have enough money for them. So at some point, that they're going to have to either be pared down, or some are going to have to fall off the wagon, and that's just the reality of the math of the situation.
He serves
and
House,
that's when the tears come.
Yeah, he serves House District 4. It is Speaker of the House Matt Regeer since 2017, Speaker Regeer, I very much appreciate you being here again. Just a couple more minutes. I know you got things to run off to. I want to ask you this question as, again, you know, Speaker of the House, not your first rodeo. How are the freshmen doing? And when the freshmen and freshwomen come in, the new lawmakers, what's the biggest or best piece of advice that you can give them to give them a leg up?
Yeah, that's a great question. There's so much to learn. And probably the best piece of advice that I was given is not to hold anything personal. This is a legislative process. I even started out by telling the entire House that of please don't make anything personal and please don't take it personal. But then also drawing that fine line of still advocating for your issues, advocating for your constituents, and still having that healthy debate, have it passionate and go for what you want, but yet hold it loosely. And that's a fine line to walk. And that's a fine line that I'm still learning to walk. Being able to hold on to something, fight for it vigorously, but knowing that at the end, I might not have the votes to get it across the finish line.
What does every session bring in terms of when new lawmakers come into the fold? What does that add to the body?
Yeah, it adds a lot of passion. And the people say that the House is the kegger and the Senate is the cocktail party. And it kind of is that way. You get the House turns over about a third of its members each time. And last session, it was COVID, and that really threw things for a loop. And the freshmen from last session, I think, really got kind of shortchanged. It wasn't a normal session, per se, and lost some of that. The stuff in the rotunda, even just the energy and excitement wasn't quite there like it is this time out, the normal session. So we've got the freshmen from last session, they're sophomores, and then the freshmen this session, too, are they really came in with a lot of ideas. They came in a lot of ideas and a lot of passion. They are real go-getter groups, and that has made for probably some of the volume that we're seeing now too. Mm-hmm. Just so many ideas and so much passion that I think is great. Great for government, great for the state, and great for their constituents.
Want to talk about property rights and then maybe even property taxes, but those are a couple of things, and as you and I chatted ahead of time, maybe one of the things going under the radar is trying to protect personal property rights.
Yeah, I think property rights, there's been so much with the surplus and just protecting our next generation and education, just so much that has been in the spotlight that property rights have kind of fallen the wayside. And there was a great bill here. I just want to hype a little bit. It's Senate Bill 159. Senator Beard has it that restrict the use of eminent domain. And it's a great bill. The eminent domain, nobody, I think, really wants to use it. But we saw some scenarios where local government was looking at possibly doing that to just put like a bike path through a guy's 20 acres he had there. And I don't think that at all is what government should be taking people's property or use of their property by force with eminent domain. So this bill just restricts it to the infrastructure that I think we all expect eminent domain, a useful kind of evil that we have to do.
Yeah.
Just keeps it to that infrastructure and not recreational stuff. And that, I think that's something that's flown under the radar, but is a big move towards property rights. You own your property, it's yours.
You know, and it's probably just coincidence, but was looking at an article, a statement made by the executive J.P. Morgan, and he says the government should essentially seize private property to build wind and solar farms. And I know it's that sort of thing that hopefully these kind of measures can protect us against.
Yeah, that's exactly it. I'd love to read that article. And it brings up the question, you know, when is the common good, necessary to take the use of somebody's private property? And it's a big issue that, and I think this bill really restricts it from that, especially recreational use. That should not be, we should not be taking people's property for recreational.
Yeah, yeah. Thanks for that. Property taxes. Are you happy with what we've done? You guys have done so far?
Not yet. I'm still happy with some ideas that are out there, but until they're across the finish line, we have to. That's one big thing that we were talking about coming mm-hmm. into the session. Democrats and Republicans are talking about high property taxes, especially in a lot of these high growth places, the Flathead, Bozeman, Missoula, even Billings. Doing something about this property tax problem that's out there. And we do have to partner. It's mostly driven by local government. And some ideas out there of a newly taxable on these high-growth places. Where is all that newly taxable growth? That's a lot of property tax coming to those local governments, and where are they spending it? Mm-hmm. And there's a bill out there to say that some of this newly taxable income that these local governments are getting needs to go back to lower the mills for everybody else. So an idea like that, I believe, is a great idea that would just kind of tap the brakes on local government spending.
Do you, last time we chatted was House Bill 927. That was a bill to, I think it was just sort of a placer bill, wasn't it? Mostly to ensure that you had a place where you could draw from some funding as you worked through the next 20 days?
Yeah, I mean, it's one more vehicle to be part of the housing conversation. It provides loans for low-income housing projects through the state. It's an existing program.
Yeah, very successful.
All paid back. What's that?
Well, I'm sorry. A successful program is, you know, good track record.
Yeah. Yep, successful program. And the costs of the program are all paid for by the interest. And then there's even more interest that goes back to the state. So the state actually makes some money off of it, but a great program, and we'll see how much money ends up in that at the end. But that could be one small piece of the housing puzzle moving forward.
Did you want to add anything? I know we chatted a bit about HB 870 too. HB 870 also. Sorry.
Yes, that is 870 also. That is Representative Lear has that bill, and that would just say we got a problem over in eastern Montana, especially that. Montana has been found out. we have kind of turned into a playground here, and there are a lot of extremely wealthy individuals that are coming to the state, and I guess that's great, and more power to them, but they're buying up agricultural land and turning that into just recreational, whether that's running buffalo just for fun or turning in their big elk ranch. And if you're a nonprofit, this bill just says if you're a nonprofit that you take out ag land out of production, I mean, the counties lose a lot of revenue then when huge wealthy nonprofits are taking out that ag land. And this would say, well, then your tax rate's going to be a different rate than ag. If you're not using it for ag, you're not going to get that lower ag tax rate. So it creates a new tax bracket for them so that the counties can still stay whole with these wealthy nonprofits buying up that ag land.
Well, I'll have to read into that one, too. I mean, that sounds like it's necessary, and hopefully the bill's being done right.
A lot of good ideas that you can look into the details and find out it doesn't play out as well. But I think this one, is, a lot of thought has been put behind it. There's a lot of groups that have worked on it, and I think it'll be more equitable to the counties that are having this problem of losing their ag and their ag, even their ag identity.
Right. Yeah. It's a big thing. Well, I know we've got the Easter break, so, and I know it's well-deserved and a lot of work ahead of the body there. Speaker of the House, Matt Regeer, blessings to you. Thank you for the public service, Matt, and we will talk to you down the road.
Thanks a bunch, Tom. Sure appreciate it. Happy Easter.
Yeah, Matt Regeer. Let's take a break and come on back. We'll continue on with the Majority Party Hour this week as Representative Bob Keenan will join us next, a longtime lawmaker, mental health advocate. We'll focus on a bill that he's carrying, HB House Bill 822, to fund more school-based mental health programs. Back with more Voices in just a bit.
Does your home qualify for a $70 discount on your internet bill? Blackfoot Communications is proud to partner with the FCC to help ensure that households can afford the broadband necessary for work, school, healthcare, and more. For more information on this federal program and to see if your household qualifies for a discount on your internet service, visit goblackfoot.com/ACP. Connect to more with Blackfoot Communications.
Welcome back. 866-627-5483. That's our phone number. And the text line is at 781-627-5483. Tom Schultz alongside University of Montana President Seth Bodner will join us next week. He'll be popping in studio. That'll be good. Chat with President Bodner. University of Montana. They got a lot of things going on. Education. In fact, I'm sure he might even be kind of lobbying around the state with our legislators. To see how things are going. And we'll check in with him. Okay, that's going to be, Tuesday of this upcoming week. Now, let's check in with Montana Representative Bob Keenan. He's from Big Fork and a longtime lawmaker, House District 4. No, that's 10, isn't it, Bob?
It is number 10.
Yeah. That's Big Fork. And then you get into the Swan Valley. You go over to Hungry Horse, too, right?
That is correct. Basically, it's from Swan Lake and Woods Bay north to all the way up Evergreen. You know, I crossed the river into Evergreen. Well, no, I don't anymore. I'm sorry. That's my Senate district. So that was a few short months ago. So it's basically cresting down to Big Fork, down the Swan a little bit, Flathead Lake. Kind of a pretty area, basically.
Well, it really is. I used to recreate in that area quite frequently, and as I lived in Missoula for a lot of years. So, do you feel like the weight is on your shoulders having to represent God's country like that?
No.
Okay.
It's wonderful.
He'll do it himself.
I have wonderful people. I pay my $15. I have a pulse, and nobody runs against me. So it works out pretty well. I have great constituents.
Well, you've been in Congress, in the Senate from 1999 to 2007, and then back there 2015 to 2023. Some stints in the House there as well. It's fair to say, longtime lawmaker. And also a longtime mental health advocate. And that's where I'm happy to have you along here and appreciate that. I saw some of the hearing. I know there's some of that focus when it comes to the appropriations bill, House Bill 2, which the good news is there is that you and the rest of the committee produced an appropriations bill that nobody's happy with. But 822, that's yes. that's interesting to me. And there's a couple of things that you've done there. I'm just going to open it up to you and tell us about 822 and what people ought to know about it.
Okay. You know, being up in God's country, I had bureau chief from the Children's Mental Health in the Department of Public Health Human Services came up to Big Fork for a wedding, and she got in touch with me, and we sat down, and first time we had met. And I knew coming that there is a program that's been running for a couple of decades called Comprehensive School and Community Treatment, CSCT. And what, you know, the dirty little details there is that the department would overfund or over-anticipate the caseloads for Medicaid, and they'd have a lot of general fund money left over. So for the past 10 or 12 years, they've had about $30 million. That's a lot of money left over. So they were funding this CSCT program in the local schools with a private contractor to come in and take care of kids that were at risk. At any rate, that program became a political football last session because it was not a legitimately authorized program, and the department was using general fund money as a sort of a honeypot, and they were funding this. Well, CMS, the Center for Medicaid and Medicare Services out of Denver, they finally sent a letter and said, no, you can't fund it the way that you're funding it. They were requiring the local schools to do a soft match, which means no money. They were just providing the classroom space, the electricity, and all that sort of stuff. So at any rate, it got discombobulated last session, so the powers that be down here at the last minute moved that program from the Department of Public Health and Human Services to the Office of Public Instruction just for a timeout, a cooling off period. Now, there were 113 school districts that were using that program at its peak. They're down to about 56 right now. But at any rate, the conversation about children's mental health and the school involvement and, you know, being a conservative Republican, I thought, well, I'm in a position to help build the foundation being the CSCT, but try to build a voluntary, tightly controlled children's school-based mental health. You know, we don't want it to be used just for behavior problems for, smart guys like me in the fourth grade throwing M&Ms around the room and getting in trouble or something like that. Yeah. That's not what it's for. So at any rate, the most difficult, what's going to happen with 822 is there will be a cataloging after an inventory of what kind of programs we have across the state of Montana in the schools. Now, the CSCT program worked really well more in urban areas. In the rural areas of Montana and the Indian reservations don't have much opportunity to have a good school-based mental health program. So what this bill will start out doing in this next in this calendar year, and I think they ought to be in pretty good shape by August or September, they will do an inventory and catalog all of the programs across the state to see what we have. They'll rank them, judge them, offer them up to school districts. Now, after that, what the details of the program will be that there will be if a school decides to participate, there is a screening process for kids and to see if they are at risk. And it's called the overall system that we'll move to after CSCT will be a multi-tiered system of support. And the screening process that begins this is totally voluntary for the school districts. It's voluntary and requires written opt-out from parents and the student. If the school decides to do a screening, and I can talk to you about numbers of the screenings that they have done in this past 4 or 5 months, there have been about 2,100 screenings that they have done. But and the governor did this as well. This subject came up in the legislative process, and its timing was pretty interesting that a couple of days after it became a big issue with this bill that I put forth, the governor put some GEER money. It's G-E-E-R. It's the Governor's Emergency Education Relief Fund that came out of COVID and it came out of the American Rescue Plan, all of that federal money that washed over the top of us. So he put a couple of million dollars into that to continue this screening. And that's, you know, that's a difficult subject to talk about as a conservative. You've got mental health in the schools. There are a lot of people that just don't want mental health in the schools. And I'm sorry to hear that, but mental health and treatment and identification of kids that are at risk for problems, whether they're bringing their family problems to school or whether it's a genetic thing or not, whatever. I mean, it's something that we absolutely have to face, or else we end up with tragedies in the school. I mean, it goes right down to just the simple bullying that I think we all participated in when we were younger. But kids are hurt with that the immaturity of young kids being mean to each other and all of that, and that can create tension, which it maybe takes years, but somebody can come into school and do a lot of damage. So mental health is in the schools. There's no question about it. So the difficult thing is this screening. Now, does screening a child in talking about suicide, talking about depression and things like that, there are people that will argue that that puts that idea of suicide in a kid's brain, and he thinks that that might be a way out from a troubled day, a troubled week, or a bad relationship with a girlfriend in high school or something like that. But, you know, the studies show that that is not the case. But it was a big concern for me. I was a skeptic, you know, for all of this.
Yeah, and this is where I got a breakup coming. And this is the what I heard, a statement on the floor of the House, you saying how hard it was and how long it took you to talk yourself into carrying this bill. I want to talk more about that as we come on back with Representative Bob Keenan here today on Voices of Montana.
Voices of Montana continues right after this.
Does your home qualify for a $70 discount on your internet bill? Blackfoot Communications is proud to partner with the FCC to help ensure that households can afford the broadband necessary for work, school, healthcare, and more. For more information on this federal program and to see if your household qualifies for a discount on your internet service, visit goblackfoot.com/ACP. Connect to more with Blackfoot Communications.
Again, it's Tom Schultz from Montana, for Montana, Voices of Montana. We are speaking with Montana Representative Bob Keenan, Senate District 10. That's up Flathead, Big Fork area, and then it goes into the Swan and a little more eastward. A longtime lawmaker. We're talking about mental health services and a bill in particular, 822, which is moving the CSCT. That's a program that was in the Office of Public Instruction just for a timeout, as Representative Keenan had said earlier, back under Department of Health and Human Services, and then funding that. The question is, this is school-based mental health programming, and I know that I think it's a fair question. It does come from a lot of conservatives. What satisfies the argument that schools are the right place for mental health care? Again, Representative Bob Keenan with us here. And Representative, I appreciate your advocacy and I appreciate your public service over those years. How do you handle that argument? As we said going into break, you had to talk yourself into carrying this bill. Tell us about that process.
Well, you know, it was fairly easy to talk myself into having the interest in mental health overall, because, I mean, years ago, Roscoe administration put in a managed care contract with a private corporation out of Baltimore, Maryland. It went terribly. So in 1999, I was the deciding vote to cancel that contract, which would be about 2 or 3 months. On June 30th of 99, that ended. So the leadership at the time was pretty upset with me that I would vote that way, but it was a disaster. So at any rate, I said, well, give me some bill draft requests and I'll rebuild the public mental health system. And I spent the next 5 or 6 years dedicating myself to doing that. So that was my background, and it was successful until we got to 2017. And to be honest with you, we had two administrations that took advantage of the natural human service advocacy vote for Democrats, and they just ignored the public mental health system. And we are in the situation we're in right now with Warm Springs and the developmental disability system as well is needs help. It's not broken like the mental health system is right now. So at any rate, I have this interest in mental health because it impacts us. So how did I justify my interest in getting a school-based mental health bill? That's where the kids are. You know, that's where you need to help with the kids. For over the last 25 years, the stigma about mental health has been reduced tremendously. You know, it used to be an embarrassment. It used to be something that nobody talked about. But there's general acceptance now that, in fact, people get depressed. And it's a clinical depression. People do have, they suffer from schizophrenia. They can have bipolar episodes. I mean, those are real. Now, we could go off on a tangent with why is that so prevalent now? Is it our diet? Or what could it be? Additives in the food type of thing and all of that. But at any rate, we are where we are. The kids are in the schools. And so we do a screening process. Well, that made me really nervous. You know, what kind of screening do we do? Are we planting seeds in kids' brains that suicide is an option? But the studies have shown that thinking is not the case. So what I did is I took the approach to really put guardrails on the school-based mental health program. And as I said earlier, we're starting with an inventory and a catalog of all the different programs. There is a program, and I hope your readers can find it on the internet, but it's called Catalyst for Change. It's out of Harlowton, Wheatland County, Big Timber, and it is spread. And if you watch, it's a 6.5-minute video, and I hope people can find that somewhere because it's fascinating and it's inspiring for what they're doing in rural, conservative, agricultural communities when kids are struggling. So the screening process that I have in this bill, I can look at one of the most important things that I have is requires parental or guardian consent and involvement with school-based behavioral health services. And so the parents, it's requiring that the parents be involved with written understandings of what they're doing with the screening. Now, if the screening finds out that the kid is at risk, that he self-identifies as a kid that struggles, that he's depressed about, clinically depressed about, you know, bullying or anything like that, that they can, it's called a multi-tiered system of support. And that's jargon from the educational establishment. And that means something to teachers, to administrators and things like that. But what that is, if you can picture a triangle with two lines, horizontal lines going through that triangle, the bottom piece after screening, it identifies kids that are just fine. They're kids, you know, they're kids with a lot of energy the way I was that get in trouble here, there, and everywhere. But, you know, the kids are okay. They're just kids. The second tier up is tier two. Those are kids that need immediate, brief intervention. They might have an issue at home. They might have an issue, you know, with their after-school athletics or whatever. But they're kids that could be feeling pressure in their life. And those kids need, like I said, brief intervention, but recognition that they're part of a community. At the bottom level, I should have said, tier one, the school teachers need to help enhance the awareness that mental health issues are real and try to continue to allow kids to be kids, but not all about stigma, basically.
Okay.
So at any rate, tier two, going up the triangle, are kids that just need brief intervention. They need a friend. They need help, whatever, but not a lot of help. Tier one are people that are kids that identify at risk. I mean, seriously at risk, and you need immediate and intensive help for them. All of this happens with parental involvement. That's where I put my guardrails around this.
Okay.
Particular bill. I tried to get it quick and dirty, but that's pretty much what it is. It's going to be a Medicaid program. There's going to be no administrative burden on the schools. The department is required to do most of the work. And one of the most important things that's going on in children's mental health in Montana right now is we send a lot of kids out of state for treatment in group homes and psychiatric psychiatric residential treatment facilities. We spend a lot of money on that. And what we've been able to do this session by increasing the provider rates in Montana is bring kids back. We just had two kids come back from Tennessee in the last week or so. One of them is out in Sanders County now. His family's in Kalispell. There were issues with the family. They wanted him to be close to the family, but not too close to the family and things like that. But we need an effective transition for these kids that have been just, they've been farmed out to Tennessee or Wyoming, California, or something like that. We need to keep services in the home, in the community, in the schools. Ultimately, the goal is to have kids in the home, in school, and out of trouble.
Let me ask you this. How, and again, with Representative Bob Keenan here, we're talking to him in general about especially youth mental health, but overall mental health in the state of Montana. Bob carrying a bill, HB 822, that funds some school-based services there. How does the education community feel? Because, I suppose it's a mixed barrel. I don't know. I mean, if I talk to teachers outside of a teachers union, I may get a different story. So I think we have to kind of couch some of that input. But the argument about teachers are there to teach and not be clinical psychologists, I think is valid. And it's something that you have to parse through so that we are not expecting our education system to be our mental health system.
That you know, absolutely, and there is that concern. But the support for this bill within the education establishment has been really, really cool. When I had my first hearing in the Appropriations Committee, one of the former superintendent of schools, recently former from Missoula, superintendent of schools out of Missoula, is now here lobbying for education groups or something like that. But I had drawn the triangle that I spoke of on the whiteboard up in the committee room. And when he testified, he said, I am totally flabbergasted. I never thought I'd see the multi-tiered system triangle up on a whiteboard in a legislative session. So, but to answer your question, you know, the support from there, for this is good from the teacher in the classroom that knows that a kid is struggling, that it's not going to be disruptive to the other 25 kids in the class, but they can you know, get in touch with the parents and how's everything going and roll with it. So the support, I think, you know, it's interesting. The support from the left is a whole lot stronger than my friends on the right, who are suspicious of all of this. They, you know, they looked at my bill, they read the title, and they said, we're going to have mental health clinics in all the schools. We're going to have psychiatrists in the school. Are we going to be passing out Ritalin to kids in the school? Mm-hmm. And I just go, oh my gosh, here come the black helicopters. No, that's not the case. We're going to deal with an issue that is real. It's in the schools, and we're going to involve the parents. If a student, if they do a screening, as they are doing right now, when they do a screening, if the kid looks at that screening tool and he just says, I don't want to fill this out, done. He doesn't have to fill it out. If the parents say, no, I'm not going to give permission for my kid to be screened, then so be it. But, you know, if we have time, I can tell you that just from September through December 30th in Montana, there were 2,500 grade school students at 18 Montana schools that were screened. And 221 of those unique students were identified with a high risk, and they needed some immediate help. 100% of the parents of those students appreciated that and said, yes, we understand, it makes sense to us, and we will participate in helping. So, you know, I'm satisfied so far. There's a company, there's an institute out of Livingston, Montana, that has the screening tool, and it's called the Rural Behavioral Health Institute. And that's the screening tool that the governor put $2.5 million into and put it forth. So at any rate, you know, I'm comfortable with where we are with this bill. the inventory and the cataloging of all the programs. Again, I'll put a plug in for people out there to somehow search and find Catalyst for Change.
I've got that. I'll look them up. I looked them up when I heard your testimony on this bill, and so I'll be in contact with them too, Representative.
You've got agricultural communities with county commissioners who are, you know, they're ag guys, and I think it was Wheatland County put $100,000 of the county's money into this program. They had such success. It's an inspiring video. It's only 6.5 minutes, so even those of us with attention deficit can handle it.
You're speaking to one. Hey, I'll pass this text message along. Bob is a real hero for our kids. Please tell him thank you. We need more like him who put kids over politics. So you got a fan out there, maybe more than just one. Appreciate the work. I do want to say that those questions, I think, are not unjustified, Representative, because we've seen some of these get away from parents in other states and parents, and I don't think some school systems are not being on the up and up when it comes to what they're telling our kids or a parent's child. And so I think those questions are not unjustified, and I appreciate those being asked. And I appreciate your response here. Look forward to chatting with you down the road. I know it's going to be a fast-paced couple of weeks here, Representative Keenan. Thank you so much, and happy Easter to you, sir.
I appreciate the opportunity. Thank you. Bye-bye, and have a great weekend.